It is a pleasure to sign today the authorization bill for the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. This bill has been approved by the Congress in an overwhelming manner and demonstrates united support for a new and vigorous space program submitted to our country by the Vice President as Chairman of the National Aeronautic and Space Council, sent to the Congress by me as President and given overwhelming support by members of both of our parties who are committed, as we all are, to seeing to it that the United States occupies an important position in the race into the far reaches of space. It is especially fitting that this bill should be signed on the day that our second astronaut, Captain Virgil Grissom, who I spoke to this morning after he had made his successful flight, I think it's most important that we should have once again this emphasis on the leadership which our fellow Americans are showing in this field, their courage, and also the strong scientific support that they've received from the entire American scientific community. It's significant also that this flight was made before the eyes of the watching world, with all the hazards that entails. As our space program continues on even more ambitious missions, it will continue to be this nation's policy to use space for the advancement of all mankind and to make free release of all scientific and technological results. And therefore, it is with great pleasure that we sign it today.
Tonight, we will not be bringing you our regular programming. Instead, we will be bringing you a special program dedicated in the memory of the crew of the Space Shuttle Columbia and, indeed, all of those who have come before and have paid the ultimate price. At first you're going to think, what kind of a memorial is this? It's going to be a little confusing at first, going through the next couple of segments as to the direction that we're really going with this. But there's been a major price paid in the history of humankind, and we think it needs to be taken into consideration for the end result of what we hope will come out of this terrible tragedy. Tonight we're going to be dedicating the program in the memory of the crew of the Space Shuttle Columbia, but we'd also like to take the focus of tonight's program and make sure that we use it as a tool to not hide ourselves and to continue to strive forward. It saddens me when I hear, a mere 3 days after the event, people crying out for the cancellation of our space program here in the United States. It definitely does grieve me, because those people calling for it are forgetting about one of the most important aspects of our humanity, and that is our desire to find the unknown and to continue to grow and indeed continue to conquer new worlds, new ideas, new plans of existence, however you would like to define that. Today, we're calling it into question whether the price we are paying is worth it. No man, no woman likes to see death. It bothers us all. It causes the world to grieve, but we cannot forget how important those sacrifices the crew of the Columbia have made, as well as the sacrifices of those who came before all of us. We must never give up. We must never stop striving. And so, tonight's program is a message. That message is that we must be diligent in our efforts to preserve not only humankind's willingness to explore, the desire to explore, but we need to face that at times there's prices to be paid. Sometimes those prices are monetary, sometimes they're in human lives. History as human beings on this planet has been one long series of stories of exploration and discovery. Please take a moment to take a look at some of the links that we have on our website tonight. You may find them interesting. Some of them discuss the development of greater apes and indeed the evolution of man towards a upright walking species and how this may have impacted our ability to walk upright and thus be a creature of a greater level of movement, long distance traveling, and indeed that spirit of wanderlust may have actually been something that was genetically developed into us as we moved beyond our ape forebearers. But we can sit here and we can argue about these issues that happened millions of years ago in terms of our evolution and focus in on the life of modern human, starting at, let's just say the last couple hundred thousand years. A great intellectual debate rages as to where the actual origin of the species is. There's two primary camps of thought, one being that a early relative of man left Africa and then mankind all concurrently developed similarly but separately. But that evidence just doesn't prove out in the DNA record. It seems, based upon the research of the last several years, that there's little to doubt, in fact, anymore, that we came from Africa. This is not conjecture anymore, at least in the opinion of most people in the scientific community. Of the mitochondrial DNA that is contained in the females of our species is quite evident in the fact that our relatives came from Africa. There's a great program, a link to it is on the website. It talks about the real Eve and our first development within the African community and how we slowly migrated out in fits and starts. And the point that I'm getting to here in this discussion is that it's these fits and starts. You see, the scientific community can't agree upon when the actual time was that we left Africa. There's arguments that are anywhere from approximately 200,000 years ago. The shortest term that I have heard is about 50, 60,000 years ago. I think most of the scientific evidence, though, does point to a time frame of sometime between 90 and 120,000 years ago, just based upon doing population mathematics dynamics. This is really a simple calculation in terms of evaluating number of genotypes that have the genetic variants that have developed across the planet and estimating the number of generations that those variations would take, and dividing that by 15 years as being the typical scope of a generation. Takes 15 years approximately for the female of the species from birth to the beginning of her reproductive life. So it's really not a difficult thing to do for us to look at the mitochondrial record and say that sometime between that time frame of 90 to 120,000 years ago, man was in one big case of wanderlust. Over a relatively short number of years, when you compare that with the 5 million years worth of evolution it took to create us, in a relatively short span of time, we covered every single continent on this planet. The movement of primitive man was quite remarkable. The movement of primitive man all the way to places like Australia. The Aboriginal men reached Australia approximately 30,000 years ago. They may have reached South America as long as 45,000 years ago. There is absolute positive proof that they have found archaeological evidence of 25,000 years ago in South America, but there is some evidence that it goes back as long as 45,000 years ago, although that evidence is still arguable and not proven. So the point in all this is mankind has always strived to look for new and better places to live. That wanderlust has cost us as a species dearly. There is no question, again, based upon the mitochondrial record, we did make attempts to reach parts of the world, and the groups that attempted these migrations failed. In some cases, some of the earlier groups succeeded in taking a small foothold, only to later become supplanted by a later migrational group. The record's there. We paid dearly in terms of human numbers. There are estimates that as early as maybe 60,000 years ago, these migrational habits of humanity may have caused radical reductions in the population. And there may have been, 50 or 60,000 years ago, as few as 50,000 human beings across the entire planet. Again, this is based upon some empirical data illustrated in the DNA record. But we started out as explorers. We started out as risk takers. We were willing to pay the price for that progress.
When first I come to Liverpool, I went upon a spree. Me clothes they were new, me money was new, got drunk as drunk a day. And the money was all gone, and I wanted more. But a man must be blind or be out of his mind to go to sea once more. Once more, once more, there's no to say once more. I spent that night with Angela in too drunk a rolling bed. Me clothes they were new, and me money was new, in the morning when she bled. And as I walked the streets about, the whores they all did roar. There goes Jack Nor, that poor sailor lad, he must go to sea once more. Once more, once more, he must go to sea once more. As I was walking down the street, I run into Rapper Brown. A young emperor take me in, and he lodged me with a crown. He said, let's hide you was one more, with me you shall go store. When I'll take your advance, and I'll give you the chance, and I'll send you to sea once more. Once more, once more, I'll send you to sea once more. Aboard of a whaling ship bound for the Arctic Sea, where the cold winds blow through the frozen snow in Jamaica round the sea. Alas, I had no hard weather gear, for I spent all my money ashore. 'Twas then that I wished that I was dead, or safe with a girl ashore. Ashore, ashore, or safe with a girl ashore. Come all you bold seafaring lads, who listen to my song. And when you go out on them long trips, pray that you don't come wrong. Take my advice, drink no strong drink, don't go sleep and rest no more. But get married, lads.
The age of exploration used to be, at least when I went to high school, something that was considered to be coinciding with the start of the Renaissance. However, we now know that our Eurocentric view on history isn't really very accurate. The age of exploration is no longer a thing that we can limit to European culture. And indeed, the time frame of the age of exploration can no longer be looked upon a thing that has happened in the last 1500 years. Most historians today look upon the age of exploration having started some 3000 years ago. I've heard numbers from other historians that are even longer. Regardless, there have been, since the beginning of the cultural era of mankind, when we actually had fixed societies. If we look upon that time frame, it's about the last 10,000 years. Our age of exploration began approximately 3,000 years ago. We have lots of cases around the globe of large-scale population movements. Indeed, a perfect example is the very recent surprise in the last couple years of finding very large settlements of Europeans in the northern China area, having worn clothing that is more akin to a Scottish or Celtic tartan than it does have any relationship with the Chinese cultures that have evolved. So we've been migrating a long time during our modern era, and we've been willing to pay very high prices for that. Often, the price is our own lives, our families' lives, and even the death of many thousands or even millions of people we may come in contact with on these explorations. But we can't help it. Mankind can't help this driving need to explore, to find a better place. It's just who we are and what we are. If we look at the age of exploration time after time after time, we can see how different cultural groups, for whatever the motivation, be they better lands to raise crops and animals, be it religious persecution, be it conquest, be it getting away from warlike neighbors, whatever the reason, people were willing to pay enormous prices to try and seek out that better place. In North America, we have the examples of the early Viking settlements that happened 500, there are some belief even 1,000 years before the coming of Christopher Columbus in 1492. These explorers paid huge prices. In most cases, the first couple of settlement groups didn't make it at all. The record of the Viking colonies along North America is an absolute disaster. Not a single colony ever survived, and yet they kept on coming back over and over and over again for a period of hundreds of years trying to make a go. We can look at North America proper in terms of that area we now call the United States and look at the first few settlements of the United States territories. It was a disaster. Jamestown, virtually half the population of Jamestown starved to death in the first year. Now, that record is repeated regardless of whether you're talking about Spanish explorations or you're talking about explorations of other cultures. The prices that were paid were enormous. Just the price alone of being on shipboard. Here's a thought for you to consider about the price that people were willing to pay. The life expectancy of a sailor was 7 years. Typically, a typical voyage would take anywhere from 6 months to 2 years, and the odds are that a third of the population of that boat would die. Very, very, very poor odds indeed. The record of the age of exploration is replete with these kind of examples of the price that mankind was willing to pay for new land, new riches, new sources of food. Indeed, there is one thing that exploration does yield, does give an opportunity to those participants, and that is the elusive opportunity of freedom. And that price is a very easy price to pay.
Boatman dance, boatman sing, boatman do the sing. Dance, boatman dance, dance, boatman dance. That's all right in the broad daylight, go home with the gal in the morning. Day of all, boatman row, city from the Ohio. Day of all, boatman row, city from the Ohio. Day of all, boatman row, city from the Ohio. Day of all, boatman row, city from the Ohio. Boatman sing, boatman dance, boatman love Miss Mary Ann. Dance, boatman dance, dance, boatman dance. Dance all night in the broad daylight, go home with the gals in the morning. Hey ho, boatman row, sitting down the river on the Ohio. Hey ho, boatman row, sitting down the river on the Ohio. Hey ho, boatman row, sitting down the river on the Ohio. Hey ho, boatman row. Goatman, saying Goatman, who knows this? As Goatman passed, as Goatman passed, as the light of the brother, like no home to gather in the morning. They all Goatman know, sitting down in front of the Ohio. They all Goatman know, sitting down in front of the Ohio. They all Goatman know, sitting down in front of the Ohio. They all Goatman know, sitting down in front of the Ohio.
Let's just focus in on North America and that funny thing that we call here manifest destiny, something that they actually used to talk about openly in our culture. Now it has evolved into something that's a little bit of an embarrassment, for some major embarrassment, because it is a very, not only Eurocentric, but just white-centric view to take upon the world. We had a perspective as an American culture from the time of those earliest settlements in Jamestown and Plymouth Rock. From those times forward, we had an attitude in this country that we were destined to conquer, to create new lands, to create a promised land. And so therefore, in the eyes of many of the people in Europe and indeed countries all around the world, America took on a view of the New Jerusalem, that it was not just the promised land for those pilgrims, but the promised land for all, and that there was opportunity for people willing to take the risk, people willing to pay those prices for opening new lands and creating new communities. If we take the Native American perspective on this, however, it's pretty bleak. It's one of a conquering culture coming in and murdering and massacring the existing resident population, and that's a very true fact. But we still, regardless of that historical black eye that the American culture will have to suffer with in our opportunity, you have to pay homage to the fact that all of those immigrants for the last 400 years have really laid it all on the line. Now, it's true they may not have had anything better where they came from, but they were willing to lay it on the line and just take enormous risks, bizarrely enormous risks. Let's look at the earliest pioneers along the Adirondack in upper New York. The odds of surviving just the first couple of seasons in a homestead farm were about 70 to 1 against you. If you weren't wiped out by the cold winters, chances are you would probably get wiped out by the Indians. This was just a fact, but people were willing to take the risk. As time progressed on, lands opened and people continued to take risks. Look at the great migration westward, the stereotypical image of America, the wagon train as people moved west. On your typical wagon train, 30% of the people on your typical wagon train would pass away. They would die off, primarily from exhaustion, malnutrition, and disease. However, if that wagon train was attacked by hostile natives, the odds were very, very strong that the entire party would get massacred. And this was true up until about the 1860s, when the post-Civil War era pretty much subdued the native cultures. Now let's take into consideration that you actually made it to your destination. Think of the plight of women. The average woman pioneer in this country during the early part of the exploration of the West had a life expectancy of 4 years, or roughly the production of 3 children. The story goes on and on, whether you're talking about Chinese populations working on railroads, Irish populations working as teamsters. All of these peoples in the process of the exploration of the country paid the ultimate price for the progress of the group.
Mark 57 seconds, stand by to start ETI on my mark.
Roger.
Minus 50. 3, 2, 1, mark.
Roger, ETI is on.
Minus 45. Minus 40.
Status check, pressurization.
Go.
Locks tanking.
Have a blinking high level light.
You are go. Water systems.
Go.
Range operations.
All clear to
launch. Capsule.
Go.
All pre-start panel lights are correct. The ready light is on. Eject Mercury umbilical. Oil evacuate.
Mercury umbilical clear.
Mercury is
evacuate. Go. Lights on.
All recorders to fast. T-minus 18 seconds and counting engine start.
May the wee ones be with you, Thomas.
Good Lord, ride all the ways.
Godspeed, John Glenn. 10, 9, 8, 7.
Distinguished guest of honor here today, we say once again how proud we all are of him, how proud we are to be Americans when America can produce the type of Colonel Glenn, and we're delighted to honor him today and hope he will say a few words to so many thousands upon thousands of people here at City Hall. Colonel John Glenn.
Just a few, yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Vice President, distinguished guests, all of you who were so thoughtful to come out and welcome us to New York. We feel that perhaps the efforts we're engaged in do really begin a new space era. My flight was but one step in this long progress. The first two steps in that were taken by Al Shepard here and Gus Grissom, who are here on the stand and whom you met just a few minutes ago. Their names need no introduction. The others hardly need any either, but there will be more names coming up in this line as more space flights occur. You'll be hearing more of Carpenter and Cooper and Shirah and Slayton as time goes on, that's for sure. It's been a team effort by us all the way, and we're but part of the whole team that's headed up by Dr. Gilruth, whom you met just a moment ago also. In a larger sense, though, I think we represent all of you on this project. It is a national and really an international project. So really, we are your representatives on all of these missions. This New York tribute this morning is certainly overwhelming. I've just never seen anything like this at all, needless to say. The honors you're bestowing on us today, we accept, but we accept them in the name of the whole Mercury team that's worked so hard. And we will continue to do our best to represent you as we think we should. Thank you very much.
We are in the age of space exploration. We've actually left our planet. We are moving on. We are continuing that search that began 100,000 years ago. We have populated every corner of our planet. We have climbed every mountaintop. We have gone to the deepest crevasse of the deepest ocean on this earth. We have gone everywhere. We have done everything, sometimes twice. So we can't stop. Again, that curiosity and seeking that makes up who we are makes us willing to make the sacrifices that need to be done. And I know the story that we've been telling here may have sounded convoluted up to this point, but the message that we're trying to get across to the people in our government primarily is that we all stand upon the shoulders of giants. We stand upon the shoulders of previous generations, and they stand upon the shoulders of their previous generations, and so on, and so on, and so on, going back 100,000 years. Enormous prices have been paid already for the conquest of this planet. Enormous prices have been paid for the evolution of technology. So it is an absolutely crazy thing for us to be in the situation that we are now in, and that we are 3 days away from tragedy and now must add 7 more names to the ledger. We add Husband, McCool, Anderson, Brown, Chawla, Clark, and Ramon. A very, very sad event. The Columbia just literally disintegrating upon reentry. I sat and watched the videos on CNN and MSNBC and the other news channels. I'm sure you all did as well. And in particular, there was one home video, digital home video, that was put through a computer and enhanced. And you could see it as it was entering the atmosphere, and the spacecraft was intact, or it appeared to be relatively intact. And then a few moments later, it just ripped into shreds. And so something went wrong. And we don't know what went wrong. We may never know what went wrong. But that is certainly no reason to cave into fear. That is no reason to cave into political expediency. Caving into either one of those would be the absolute worst thing that we could do to memorialize not only those 7, but to memorialize all of those heroes that have given the price during the entire history of aviation. It has not been 7 in Columbia. It has not been the 21 listed on the link on our website. Those are only the people involved in direct accidents involving spacecraft. But there have been far more killed in roles of aviation test pilots, in training accidents, in experimental design tests of one kind or another. The price that has been paid to give us the ability to leave this planet has been an enormous price in its own right. Now let's compound that with that historical record that mankind handed to us. Because if it wasn't for that wanderlust, if it wasn't for that curiosity, if it wasn't for that desire for the new, the better, the unknown, we never would have taken those early risks. The Wright brothers never would have built their plane and attempted their first takeoff at Kitty Hawk. None of the progress that we have made would have happened. We would still all be bushmen. And that indeed would have been a sorry fate for mankind when you consider that all that we have accomplished in the last 100,000 years. So tonight we really want to pay tribute to the Challenger folks. The Columbia crew of STS-107. and give them the best possible memorial that we can. That memorial is not a church service. That memorial is not a plaque. They will get plenty of those church services and plaques. They will get their names inscribed under the Hall of Heroes, the Memorial of Heroes at the Kennedy Space Center. But the greatest memorial that we could possibly give the crew of the STS-107 is to not stop, to continue to strive. And I'm hoping that this will renew people's interest in space. I know all the people who normally listen to our show, this is not a problem. You're all geeks. You all take interest in these type of issues. But please, look outward, outside of your little geek communities, and pay attention to what your politicians are doing. Don't allow them the opportunity to use this as a tool of political expediency. I'm already seeing some people in political offices that are pointing fingers and blaming this on Bush and using it as a method of trying to sabotage Bush. I'm also seeing politicians who have never liked the space program looking this as a political expedience opportunity to take the money away from NASA that they have already pillaged and put it into the programs that they prefer, that are on their special interest group agendas. It's not the time to pull back away from the space program. It is time to move forward. Time to move forward onto higher planes. To give more funding, not less funding. I hope that you've all had the opportunity to think now about how we collectively as a human society have, right along with the seven, paid our bills. We can't let the people in political office rob us of all of that equity that humanity has built up over the thousands of years, and rob our children of the opportunity to leave this planet and explore further and further destinations into our future. Thank you.
But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why, 35 years ago, fly the Atlantic? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.